Now, the voices of Bronco Athletics, Bob Beeler and Chris Lewis on Sports Radio 93.1 FM and 1350 AM, The Ticket.
For the third Saturday in a row tomorrow, Boise State football fans will have to find other teams to watch on a Saturday. We had a Thursday game with New Mexico. We had a Friday game last week with Virginia, and it's the bye week this week. So Boise State football will take a hiatus, and then we'll get back into it with eight straight regular season weeks, finishing the Saturday after Thanksgiving against Fresno State, and hopefully leading to the first Saturday in December, a championship game probably against San Diego State Aztecs, maybe the Hawaii Rainbow Warriors.
Wow, you're just playing out the whole season already. Boise State's in the championship. They're up against Hawaii.
Yeah, I want to have the trip to Hawaii. Yeah,
and somehow Hawaii is ahead in the rankings of Boise State, and so they are hosting the Mountain West Championship game. So we've already figured this all out somehow. I don't get it, but Bob, you know better than anybody else. You study this. So I'll just listen to you. I'll buy my flight already. Boise State and Hawaii championship game. Book it.
Hawaii will need a win probably tomorrow against Colorado State to make that happen and then beat San Diego State head-to-head in a few weeks. But Coach Harsin yesterday was on our airwaves, 7 o'clock, as every Thursday night we have Coach Harsin Weekly. And as we look at this season, in my blog earlier in the week, I drew parallels to the 2014 season, when Boise State lost two games in the month of September and then ended up rattling off a whole bunch of wins to close the season, won the Mountain West. I'm going to stop short of saying that they're going to go to a New Year's Six with two losses, although I would have stopped short of thinking Boise State would be able to do that in 2014 as well, and ask Coach Harsin the question if he draws on any of the parallels from this year to last year, or excuse me, to 14.
What did we learn? We learned that we needed to go back out there and just play the way that we practice. And I think that season, we got a little bit tight. And that's the one thing you don't want to have happen. You still want to go out there. You got to be loose. You got to play fast. You got to be confident. You got to prepare that way. And, that's the thing I learned from the 2014 season is it still comes down. There's a few execution issues in there that can be corrected throughout a game. But that emotion that you bring, that enjoyment that you bring, because anytime you enjoy something, you're going to be better at it. And to not lose focus on that. And there's always noise. There's always distractions. There's always a lot of things, and you got to avoid that. And you got to focus on just going out there and getting better. And so I thought we did that in 14. It's no different. We got to do that right now. We have a huge challenge ahead of us with BYU and the schedule that's in front of us. We have no more bye weeks. It's on from this point. It's time to go out there and show the work we put in, the mindset that we have, and that needs to display itself for four quarters each game.
Well, there was certainly noise in 2014, Chris. You remember being on the air as everybody was complaining about that debacle at Air Force with seven turnovers, and then the team came back, tough game with Nevada, and kind of moved things from there. But taking comments, sounds like maybe he thought that team was a little tight, maybe trying a little too hard. And we'll see maybe if a week off going back to basics, maybe they can be a little more relaxed, a little more focused coming back.
Yeah, a lot of people are doing the 2014 thing, and I don't see the situations as very similar. Maybe record-wise, two losses. Again, the other team was 3-2 at the time. This team's 2-2 at the time of the second loss. 2014, in between the two losses, one was against Ole Miss, a ranked team in their territory, not their home, but their territory, at the beginning of the season, in a game in which Boise State was very competitive in until they couldn't really execute as well as they wanted to inside the red zone, and then the game got away in the fourth quarter. And then against Air Force, just the sheer amount of turnovers made that game, I don't want to say random, because turnovers are the fault of you, and they are also the credit of the other team for forcing those turnovers. Weston Steelhammer was about 3 interceptions in that game for Air Force. So he was really good, and I can't just erase that. But the three games in between, Boise State scored 37, 38, and 34, winning those games by, an average of about 20 points per game in between. So you saw the level of, all right, this is Boise State football in between the two losses. We saw a level of excellent Boise State play through the first month of that season that we haven't seen quite yet through the first month of this season for me to exactly say that the parallels are the same. We saw a level of offensive talent even within the month where they lost a couple of games, or month plus where they lost two games, to where you saw where things could click. I mean, then Jay Ajayi was still putting up numbers. Grant Hedrick was still effective in most of the games except the Air Force one. And you had the pieces there. This team hasn't shown it, not to say that it can't, but just to say it's a similar situation to 2014, I'm not willing to do that, because 2014 showed you more from an offensive standpoint to that point of the year than this team has.
But do you think maybe the defense showed more this time?
Yeah, the defense certainly. Although against Air Force, I thought the defense, recalling, played pretty well.
It did, and it should have been a lot worse with seven turnovers.
Exactly.
You're right. For Air Force to win 28-14, it probably should have been about 48-14 in that game. I'm just saying, two losses. I remember people thought the sky was falling in 2014, and there was no way this team was going to save itself. They were 0-1 in the conference. This team at least is 1-0 in the conference.
Mm-hmm. So at least you got the conference win, and I could see the similarities, but I'm just not willing to be like, all right, 2014, they were able to flip it and go on to win the Fiesta Bowl. So no reason to worry about a 2-2
start
to this
think,
year.
I think there's more questions this time than last time.
Yeah.
I do agree with that. And the biggest question is probably the offensive side of the ball. And the last night with Coach Harsin, we talked about where the offense needs to improve moving forward.
Unlike the offense or the defensive side, you know, when one guy messes up, it affects everything. And usually that guy is going to be at the point of attack because it's the most difficult block or whatever it is you're trying to make in that situation. So you got to get all 11 guys. I think that really is what it comes down to. We didn't extend drives. We didn't convert third downs, you know, after we had the first drive in there. When you're not doing that, it makes it very difficult when you're not doing that consistently. And, you know, we got to find ways to have execution where we don't hurt ourselves. We had a couple penalties in there, and we had some drops that, you know, put yourself in a position where you're expecting to be second and five, you're expecting to be third and three, and then you're in a little bit deeper down in distance. And when you're in those situations on third downs in particular, you know, there's too many varieties now on the defensive side where they can bring pressures, drop coverage. With the three down front defenses are playing, they've caught up to the offenses as far as this is what, you know, we're able to do to stop you. And they're mixing it up well. So stay on schedule. That's where our offense, we need to stay on schedule, third and 3-5. Be in that area if you're going to be in the third down. Gives you an option to run, gives you an option to throw. And now you got the defense more on their heels as far as how you can attack them.
Looking at some numbers from last year to this year. Last year, third down conversions, they were 48%. So almost 50-50 for third downs. This year, they're 37%. And this is where a lack of a running game hurts you in a couple of ways. One, he's talking about stay on schedule. If you run the ball on first down and get nothing or 1 yard, you're looking at second and nine. If you can move the pile for, say, 3 yards, you're now second down and seven. Then maybe you move it for another 3 yards. If you choose to run it on second down, you're now third and four. Anything less than five, the defense has to be fairly honest in thinking that you might run it or you might pass it. Too many third and longs. And even when there's been third and shorts, the run game has not been good enough to move the pile to pick up an easy first down and keep things going. That's why Boise State's offense, in my opinion, has not been able to move the ball down the field, because there's a monkey wrench at third down that pops its way up, and it pops its way up sometimes pretty early in the drive, and you have to punt.
And that's when you hear the criticisms of lack of creative play calling and the play calling seeming predictable. I think that's where it comes in. It's like, well, if you're at second and nine all the time, there's only so much you can do with play calling. It's a lot easier to call plays when on first down you can think you can run it for 5 yards and you can get second and five. All of a sudden you can do a lot more with play calling and you are more unpredictable. So, yeah, when I hear that criticism of predictable play calling, I think that is a reflection on the running game not being able to generate consistent yardage. And if you're behind on the down and distance, and then sacks also are included in this, a sack kills a drive. I don't know what was the number that they said in the preseason. I think Boise State said something like percentage of drives that have a sack in it. It's hard to convert that drive into something substantial from a point standpoint, because you just killed yourself with a loss of yards and a loss of down on a play.
Wouldn't you think most sacks are at least 5 yards?
Yeah.
Most. And then, so if you take a sack, A lot of times you're passing on third down, so that probably snuffs the drive out and you have to punt, even if it's on first or second down. Let's say it's on first down. All of a sudden you're second and 15. We'll have to check the numbers, but I want to say it was like, you know, only 20% of the drives where there was a sack, you end up getting downfield, something like that.
They threw out a number
it was low.
In the preseason, and it was a low number. So it goes to show you, if you can't run it and you're also having sacks on top of that, well, no wonder the play calling isn't as imaginative as you want it to be.
And lastly, he said last night on the show that he was glad they had the bye.
I think it is. You know, right now, looking on it, as far as where we are as a team, yeah, it came at a good time. Obviously, the disappointment from the last game that leads into it. All right, what an awesome opportunity now with the challenges we have that we faced and the challenges we have right now that we're working on and the challenges that we have ahead of us. What a great time to be focused on us. And so I think, you know, as the season has gone at this point, it's a good thing for us right now. Gives us a great opportunity to correct a few things and then really get locked in for this next game.
Last year, the bye was even a week or a couple of weeks early. It was after week two, headed into week three, was where the Broncos had a bye, and it was off a tight game with Washington State. This year, it's a couple of weeks later at the end of September, so you don't get to choose your bye. Sometimes maybe it's a little more strategic going into a big game or maybe giving you some rest coming off a tough physical game. But this year, the way the team has started out, Chris, I think sort of having a reset, a mini camp during the season, I think has been helpful.
You can spin that however you want it to be. Playing well going into the bye, you can be like, it energizes you.
I don't like
better.
Playing well in a bye, have
okay.
a bye.
All right. Well,
I won't spin that one.
You won't. All right, cool. So I hope they use the bye to get better and use that extra rest. But again, Boise State had extra rest against Virginia going into that game at home, and the extra rest didn't matter at all. So it's just a product of what do you do with it. A
lot of college football this weekend on the ticket, as well as pro football on Sunday. Tonight it's going to be USC and Washington State. Coverage begins at 8. Then tomorrow, Georgia and Tennessee. Coverage begins at 1. Don't bother me from, say, 1 to 5 tomorrow afternoon. And then Sunday, triple header. Tennessee, Houston, Philadelphia against the Chargers and the Colts and the Seahawks.
Sounds like a
You're not going to bother me, are you, Chris?
Saturday? I plan to, actually. I wanted to see what the reaction would be if I did, so... No, I'm not going to reveal my plan right here, right now.
It's the easiest $1,000 ever. Listen weekdays at 7 a.m., 10 a.m., 1 p.m., and 4 p.m. Hear the keyword, text it to 62582, and you could instantly win $1,000. KTIK's 4K a day on Sports Radio The Ticket. Up next, the Murph. Brian Murphy from Washington, D.C. weighs in on the NCAA scandal, as well as Trump and the NFL and Boise State football. The Murph joins us next on Sports Radio The Ticket. Bob and Chris back here on Idaho Sports Talk, Sports Radio The Ticket, 1 to 3. I'll be joining Caves today from 3 until 6, so I've got 5 hours today. Amazing. Bye week.
Yeah.
I should be getting a soft week, and I get 5 hours on a Friday when I have allegedly a weekend off, right?
They put you to work during the bye week, which means, hey, you have a little bit of extra time. You thought you'd be able to spend it with some family.
Yeah.
Get to hang out with Clarence a little bit more. Yeah. How's Phoebe doing? Yeah. You can, nah, man.
They got groomed yesterday. They look good.
Oh, okay. So they're feeling probably really good about themselves. Your guys are such great dog parents.
Mm-hmm. We are. We are definitely great dog parents. So Boise State getting set to... relax this week as they have a bye. Coaches are going to go out and spend some time recruiting this weekend. And we're going to catch up with an old friend, a guy that sat in your chair for a couple of years here with the Bob and Murph show that became the Bob and Chris show that became Idaho Sports Talk.
I'm still sitting in his chair, I think, is how it goes. It's still his chair, and I'm just sitting in it.
It still doesn't look very comfortable, Murph.
It's your chair by now, Chris.
Okay, I can take ownership of it.
Yeah.
At this point, all right, I feel proud. I can now accept it.
So, Murph, what do you make of all this NCAA, FBI scandal? I mean, this was something that broke. Even the NCAA had no idea it was coming because it was started by something that really had nothing to do with basketball. But is anything that's been revealed in and of itself shocking?
It's not all that shocking. I think anyone who works sort of in the business, kind of hears about these things, knows that the outsized role that shoe companies play. I think the takeaway for me is that these players, particularly the high-end players, have more value are more valuable than a scholarship, than a full scholarship. Now, I know that a lot of people, a lot of callers, a lot of listeners are going to say that a full scholarship is a heck of a deal for these guys. And they're right. For most people, it is. But these guys have value above and beyond a full scholarship, and you're seeing it. That value doesn't go away just because the NCAA caps it. What ends up happening is shoe companies, AAU coaches, handlers find a way to get access to that surplus value, and they end up, you know, writing $200,000 checks to get players to commit. And that's the way it works, and I don't know if there's any way to change it besides a radical revamping of the NCAA, which I'm not sure most fans want, or obviously the colleges don't.
Yeah, that was one of the things that I brought up a couple of days ago. You said what fans want, and I kind of posed a question. Is there something about college sports that you enjoy it more knowing they're not making any money? And why does them being relatively broke in your mind make you enjoy what you're watching more? Like, I don't that connection doesn't register in my brain.
I don't think that's the way fans think about it. And I've had a lot of interactions on Twitter with fans about this. I don't think they think of it from a money standpoint at all. I think what they think, and I get a lot of this reaction on Twitter, if the rules were changed and say you were able to pay players or they were able to sign licensing agreements or whatever, fans think, particularly fans of Boise State, think that they would have no chance of competing, that only the big schools, Texas, USC, you name it, North Carolina, Duke, in basketball, Kentucky, would be the only teams that could compete. And what I try to explain, and obviously I don't do a very good job of it, is the top players already go to those schools.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Alabama already gets the best players in the country. By letting Alabama pay for them would not change the fact that Alabama, Ohio State, Michigan, Penn State, Texas, Oklahoma are still going to get the best players in the country. What the NCAA has been extremely good at is this illusion of parity, this illusion that any school is capable of doing it. It's simply not true in recruiting. The best players go to the name schools. Now, you might be able to do what Boise State did, or there's all kinds of examples, Butler, Gonzaga in basketball, and that is outwork people. You know, find diamonds in the rough, find recruits, build your brand big enough. And that won't change, is what I try to explain. That won't change if the players can get paid a stipend or if they can sign likeness agreements. None of that's going to change. Alabama and the like are going to get the best players, and in order for a school like Boise State to compete, they're going to have to get one of the all-time greatest coaches. They're going to have to find a quarterback that nobody else wanted. It's going to take 15, 20 years of building the program up like Gonzaga has done in basketball. That's just the way it works. The system is rigged against those schools already. Allowing the players to benefit would not rig the system any more than it already is rigged.
So, Murph, in this current mess, some assistant coaches have been arrested. They'll go on trial. You have Rick Pitino and Tom Jurek, the AD at Louisville, that are out. Are we going to see more carnage? Are more guys going to be out? Are we going to see more guys get arrested? Or do you think it stops here for a little while?
I don't think it stops here. I think people are going to sing. These guys are not, you mentioned these assistant coaches are going to go on trial. I don't think they are. I think they're going to sing. I think we've seen this over and over and over again where usually the young assistant coach takes the fall for the older, richer, multimillionaire coach. We saw it at Louisville earlier, right? They were having these parties where they invited prostitutes in and were paying prostitutes to have sex with recruits. And Rick Pitino got off with barely nothing, and his assistant got fired. It's one thing if you get fired. It's another to go to jail to protect somebody. I don't think these guys are going to go to jail. I think they're going to start singing. I think Adidas is already dragged into this. I think they're going to drag Nike into this. I think it's going to change the landscape. That's not true. I don't think it's going to change the landscape. I think some people are going to go to prison. A lot of coaches might get fired. A handful of coaches, 5, 6. Some ADs may lose their job. And unless the NCAA is willing to radically change the way they do business, this will go on again. It will be back to business as usual within a couple of years, and they'll find a new way to pay for the best players to go to the schools that they need them to go to.
Well, I think no matter what system you have, somebody out there is going to look for an edge.
Oh, yeah, no, there's no doubt. I mean, we see it everywhere, right? The cheating in sports is, you know, whether it's a spitball or, you know, whatever. People are going to find a way to try to cheat in sports. I don't think that changes no matter what the system is. But I don't think there's been a lot of dire predictions that this is going to end college basketball, end college athletics. I don't think it will. I mean, in the 1950s, as you know, there was a huge cheating scandal. Games were fixed. Schools were banished forever, basically, in New York City, and college basketball is just fine. So I don't think it's going to end. I don't think it's going to end here, to your original question. I think more coaches are going to get caught up in this. But I also don't think that college sports are going to fundamentally change as a result of this.
Ryan Murphy joining us, Idaho Sports Talk, Sports Radio, The Ticket. And speaking of sports in danger, if you will, seems like Donald Trump has taken a little bit of a stance against the NFL as of late. Is this, and with you being close to D.C. and everything, is Donald Trump a threat to the NFL stability?
Well, in some ways, I think yes. There's a couple different issues here. I think the biggest threat to the NFL and to football in general, and I've written about this many times when I was at the Idaho Statesman and talked about it on this show, is head trauma, is brain injuries. And I think we saw that hit last night, Trevathan's hit, that injured Devontae Adams. I think that is the great danger that moms and dads are going to stop letting their children play football because of CTE, potential for brain injuries, potential for paralysis that comes with these massive hits to the head. It got lost in all the protest talk, but Donald Trump also said that football had become too much of a wimps game, basically, that they weren't allowing big enough hits. Of all the things he said, I thought that was the most dangerous to the NFL. The fact that people believe the game is not violent enough is the exact opposite direction that we should be moving. As for the protests, I mean, you know, let's face it, I cover politics now. Donald Trump is a skilled politician, even if he's only been doing it for a couple of years, and he knows what issues are going to rile up his base, and the issue of not saluting the flag is an issue that riles up his base. I understand that the players are doing it for a different reason, and I think that's been overshadowed in this. I agree with their ability to use their First Amendment privileges wherever they like, but Donald Trump has found a way to turn this into a flag argument and an anthem argument, which it never was before. And he's done a great job of turning public support against these players. I don't think his position is very popular, but I think what he's been able to do is drag down the players' position as well. Even though I don't think that was the players' position, he's been able to conflate it with the flag and the anthem, and that's certainly driving it down. And I think those two issues combined could take down the NFL, the head injury thing and this flag thing.
Read an article the other day which caused a lot of food for thought that Donald Trump, because of his battles with the NFL in the past, one as a litigant for the USFL, and I guess he's had three or four tries at buying an NFL team and was rebuffed every time, that he's been out to get the NFL around town. Any validity to that story?
You know, certainly Donald Trump has tried to become a member of the NFL or take it down for many years, since the 80s with the USFL, and one of the downfalls of that is he wanted to compete directly with the NFL, which is why the league ended up folding. I honestly don't think he wants to take the NFL down. The owners of the NFL have donated heavily. Woody Johnson, the former owner of, or I guess he's still the owner of the Jets, is now an ambassador in the Trump administration. Robert Kraft is one of his very good friends. What I think, Donald Trump suffered some high profile failures on Capitol Hill, particularly the healthcare policy and a couple of other things. He likes the applause. He was at a rally. He said, you know, these guys need to stand up. They need to be fired if they don't. And it generated all kinds of applause and all kinds of good press for him among his base, his supporters. And I think once that happens, Donald Trump is a master politician, knows how to feed that fire, and has done a great job of it. And I think it's really hurt. I don't think you're going to see many people kneel. I think that if they many players kneel, I think if they do, they'll kneel before the national anthem, and they'll stand probably with arms linked for the national anthem. I think in the end, Donald Trump is going to win this fight, and I think in part because the owners see the damage that it's doing to the game.
Murph, great catching up, covering sports and politics both in the D.C. area for McClatchy. Glad to visit with you today, and we'll catch up a little later on in the fall as well.
I appreciate you guys having me on. Thanks a lot.
And that is Brian Murphy. Enjoyed doing the show with him. He moved to D.C. after he got married, and Chris, always good to catch up with him.
Yeah, then there's no better time to be a part of D.C. covering political floor with having a sports connection to him. He's right down the lane. It's a fastball down the middle of the plate, and he can just get his perfect swing on this and knock it right out the park, Giancarlo Stanton style.
Wow. And that's something that Fish is smiling about, is Giancarlo Stanton is getting closer and closer to the magical 60 or 61 home runs. As we look at... there's Fish back. Caller number three is going to win a pair of tickets to watch Boise State and BYU Friday, October the 6th at the Village Cinema. We have both family-friendly theater and a 21-plus one as well, and combo specials for drinks and food. It's Boise State and BYU on the big screen. Call 208-424-9300 now. Brought to you by Peterson Auto Group and Peterson's Clothing. Up next, we've got a sports update. The Bears were losers on the field last night. How are they losers off the field as well? That's next on Sports Radio The Ticket.
And we'll start the Ticket Sports Update with some news about the game that you could heard on the Ticket last night, Green Bay versus Chicago. Well, the Bears got killed on the field, and it wasn't much better off the field after the second fumble by quarterback Mike Glennon, which he somehow inexplicably launched off his knee for what I think was the farthest pass he's thrown all season up to that point. Butterfingers decided to tweet out butter knees, which the Bears then tweeted out stick to candy. The Butterfingers came back with stick to football. Oh, wait, it's 14-0. And it just went downhill from there. The Bears tried to tweet back at him again. And then Butterfinger said, it's 14-0. You're paying attention to the wrong game. 21-0. And then the Bears stopped responding. Butterfinger said, we're concerned now. What happened?
The Bears are who we thought they were is what happened. And Butterfingers did not let them off the hook.
When your quarterback's Mike Glennon, you just got to take the losses.
You got to take the L's, man.
Yeah, you got to learn to take the L's.
Sometimes on social media, it happens to everybody. Somebody has a tweet that it wasn't interpreted the way they wanted. They spelled something wrong. You just got to take the L. Mm-hmm. Take the L and move on.
Do you think we're going to see Trubisky in the month of October?
Well, speaking of that, after the game, John Fox said everything is going to be evaluated, including the quarterback. However, he did say we're 1-3 to start the season, and it's not just the quarterback's fault.
Somebody brought up on the broadcast, I think it was like either Jim Nance or one of the reporters, that John Fox, when he was with Denver, they had a Thursday game, they lost it, and then the next time they had a game, the Sunday, they used the extra time to implement a read option type offense for Tebow, and in came Tim Tebow from then on forward until they brought in Peyton Manning to replace Tim Tebow because, hey, you need Peyton Manning. Somebody to replace Tim Tebow, and just another average quarterback wouldn't be able to overcome the Tebow hype. But maybe this is the time to do it. I have more expanded thoughts that we'll get to about this game coming up at around 2:00. But I, in a way, admire the Bears to sticking with their plan, although there's nothing that would be detrimental for getting Trubisky a couple of snaps at the end of a blowout. What are you doing?
Why are you still playing your starting running back at that point, too, with Jordan Howard? Maybe John Fox has him on his fantasy team?
No, I had Tariq Cohen on my fantasy team starting in this game, and they didn't give him the ball. He's their most dynamic player on offense.
He returns punts.
And every time he got a big run, it was a holding penalty, and I wanted to, like, throw something at the TV. Like, Chicago, what are you doing? Let Tariq Cohen at least get some yards. And at the end of the game, he's getting these garbage time points, and then they take him out around the goal line, and I just shake my head.
They got to reward their starting running back. But, Chris, you're talking about the Bears sticking to a plan. Well, sticking to a plan of absolute maximum pettiness. Russell Westbrook finally signed his extension. Maybe not finally, we should say, though. 5 years, $205 million. But maybe this was the plan all along, because today just so happens to be the birthday of one Kevin Durant.
So let me get this straight. Russell Westbrook became the highest paid player in the NBA on Kevin Durant's birthday.
Yeah.
No coincidence there. Nope. That's absolutely that is absolutely on point. This contract was on the table for at least a couple of months ever since the new CBA allowed them to be able to do this. John Wall signed his. Steph Curry signed his. Russell Westbrook was waiting. okay, let's get it now. Let's do it. So you picked this day in particular.
Looking at my thoughts a few years ago when Durant left, I said I thought Westbrook was going to go and that Oklahoma City was going to become Sacramento.
Yeah.
This is a big move for the franchise. You know, you have to keep stars. You have to keep players that, you know, are amongst the best players in the league. I think they've got Carmelo for another year after this year. Now, whether that experiment works or not will be remain to be seen. I don't think they can entice Paul George to stay, but who knows? Maybe they've totally reinvented their team with a couple of interesting trades and a long-term signing deal of Westbrook.
I mean, this, I don't know how you can, if this works at some kind of a level, you're not going to go into a better situation, really, for Paul George. You got Russell Westbrook signed up for 5 more years. You have Carmelo Anthony at least for another year.
He does have an early termination option, though.
So
he
Which one, Westbrook?
Out. No, Anthony. He right, can opt out sense. For next year.
Okay, so maybe it's
but no
not
one else
is
going to pay him $27.5 million.
But going back to Sam Presti here, how he saved Oklahoma City from being Sacramento, he might have just completed like the best offseason that an executive has ever had. Think about it. He traded Sabonis and Oladipo to get Paul George, and he traded Doug McDermott and Enes Kanter to get Carmelo Anthony. Signed Russell Westbrook to a 5-year extension. Like that's about as slam dunk as can be for an exec.
His only problem is that there's other teams that are just as good on the Western side, but he's put themselves, their team, right there with these other teams like Houston and San Antonio. I think they're probably still behind the Warriors, but would you be shocked if they had the second-best record in the Western Conference?
No, I absolutely think that's in play, and it just goes to show you the power of having one established star, because if you have one established star, it's easier to get the second, and once you get the second, it's easier to get the third. So that's why everything in the NBA is about getting that one franchise guy, because your life becomes a lot easier once your franchise has one of those.
I saw this tweet from Darren Rovell. Westbrook might not want to take any advice from Carson Wentz. His game checks in the final year of this deal, $569,512.
Game check?
Per game.
Per game in the final year of his deal.
Woo-hoo.
So he better not hope if someone's on the free throw line, he's mic'd up. I'll give him my game check if he hits his free throw. A little bit different than $31,000.
Yeah, you're giving him a nice,
but
nice
also,
car.
You know what, though? It also might be, even though it's more money, percentage. You know, if you're making what he's making, maybe $500,000 is a drop in the bucket compared to $30,000. I mean, if we were going to give away money compared to either of those guys, we would hurt more.
And think about it. Of the guys who have signed this contract, and again, I think it's just John Wall and Steph Curry at this point. John Wall makes his money and plays in the D.C. area. Steph Curry makes his money and plays the Bay Area. I think that money's going to go a lot farther in Oklahoma City.
He can probably buy the state of Oklahoma at this point.
Than it does in California and living in Washington, D.C. Like, it feels like he probably made, whatever that contract is, was it, how much a million a year? Something like 35 to 40 million a year.
Something.
It probably feels like 80.
Well, there's several things. One, I got to believe the taxes in D.C. and California are significantly higher than the taxes in Oklahoma.
Yeah.
And then I also think that cost of living. I mean, Bay Area, I know, is extremely expensive to live in. I think D.C. is expensive to live in, too. I would think of major cities that have NBA teams. Cost of living in Oklahoma City might be one of the lowest.
He's staying winning and doing all of the petty stuff in the process.
And speaking of money, it's the easiest $1,000 ever. Listen weekdays at 7 a.m., 10 a.m., 1 p.m., and 4 p.m. to hear the keyword. You can text it to 62582, and you can instantly win $1,000. It's KTIK's 4K a day on Sports Radio, The Ticket. Up next on Quick Hits, I'll talk about one of my favorite players ever that's retiring this weekend, and Chris is going to talk about the top three games on the NFL schedule. That's next on Sports Radio, The Ticket.
Quick Hits with Bob and Chris. Topic number one.
All right, Chris, coming into the bulk of the NFL weekend after last night's game that the Packers won easily over the Bears. What do you see as the top three games on the schedule?
I'm going in this, not any order, but these are definitely the three. Rams-Cowboys is an intriguing one. Rams, extra rest, they played on Thursday. Cowboys, short rest, they played on a Monday last week. Dallas is 2-1. They looked pretty good the 2 weeks that they won. The 1 week they lost, they looked awful. Rams have been surprisingly competent, maybe surprisingly to a lot of other people. I picked them to go to the playoffs. So this, if they were able to go to Dallas and win a game when they have extra rest and Dallas has short rest, that can really set them up for a possible playoff position. So I have that one on the list. Lions-Vikings. Lions coming off of just getting robbed. Like, I still think Golden State got into the end zone on that play at the end against the Falcons. If you think the Falcons are one of the best teams in the NFC, like everybody does, you have to think that they certainly have a chance to beat Minnesota if they have to use their backup quarterback. But Case Keenum looked pretty effective last week. Both teams 2-1, division game with Green Bay winning. I think that's an important one for both of those teams. And then last on the list is Raiders and Broncos. I don't know which one of these teams are good yet. They're both 2-1. The Raiders and Broncos both coming off of bad losses. Raiders just look like they couldn't do a thing against Washington, and the Broncos, after starting 2-0 and beating Dallas, you go to Buffalo and lose. So one of these teams is going to be 2-2, and after a 2-0 start, it's going to look like that first quarter of the year wasn't what they wanted, with both of those teams having aspirations at the playoffs. And the winner is in a great spot in the AFC West, so I think that's a big pivot game in that division.
One game I might put into your top three, Steelers and Ravens in Baltimore. I think that could be interesting.
Yeah, it's the same kind of scenario, too, with both teams 2-1, a pivot game.
Topic number two.
One of your favorites, Matt Cain, retiring this weekend. How special is he to the Giants?
Well, he's pitched for the Giants for 13 seasons. He was their first-round pick in 2002, got to the majors in 2005. He will only be the fourth San Francisco Giant in history to play for only the Giants. Only three other players, Jim Davenport, Scott Goreltz, and Robbie Thompson, decent players, but not like Willie Mays, played their entire career for the Giants. He had 104 wins. If he gets to 105, he's going to pitch on Saturday against the Padres for the last time. He'll become number five on the all-time San Francisco Giant win list. We're not counting New York. Number six right now. He's also number three on San Francisco's all-time strikeout list. But how about this, Chris, in the postseason? Pitched in eight postseason games in the three runs the Giants had in the World Series, 2.10 ERA. Pitched in the clinching game in all three series in 2012 as the starter. Of course, all three games won by the Giants. And in 2010, no earned runs in 21 and two-thirds innings in the postseason. And he's one of six pitchers in all of baseball ever to throw a perfect game, start an all-star game, and win a World Series start.
Give him his Hall of Fame plaque.
No,
right
he's
now.
Not a Hall of Famer. He's a Giant Hall of Famer.
Number three.
See, look at that. He's not just a Hall of Famer. He's a Giant Hall of Famer. He's just building him up to be even better than a normal Hall of Famer.
Not a Cooperstown Hall of Gods. All right, Chris, what Boise State teens don't have buys this weekend?
Pretty much everybody. It's a busy weekend for a lot of these Boise State squads. Volleyball yesterday got a pretty big win against New Mexico after dropping the first set. They won the next three and looked strong in doing so. So at a spot where they could have suffered an L, wouldn't have been inexcusable to lose at New Mexico, typically tough for them. They ended up getting that win, and now they have UNLV up next coming on Saturday on the road. So that's another one that's crucial for Boise State volleyball. Meanwhile, the soccer team, they play today at 4 o'clock. So right after the show, I'm going to head over to the soccer complex and get ready to call Boise State New Mexico, one of the hotter teams in the Mountain West. And then on Sunday, they take on the team that was picked to win the league in San Diego State for a squad that has had a very good non-conference, Boise State Soccer. This is a big home conference weekend to see if they can put themselves in a position to be a contender in the league.
1-1 off the two road games. Got to win them both to be a big-time contender?
Yeah, I mean, at least get a split at home when you're at home weekend against these two good teams. That way you can position yourself for the top six, and that's the Mountain West tournament when it comes to soccer. But if you want to win the league, you probably would like to have both.
Topic number four.
It'll be tough, though. Why is Jay Ajayi special?
Well, Jay's got a couple things going for him. He was born in London and lived there until he was seven. He'll be playing in London for the Dolphins tomorrow against Fish's Saints. He now has his own emojis, first player in the NFL to have his face on a hashtag triggered emoji, but maybe the biggest thing, he also has a candy. It's Sugar retail stores has manufactured something called Sweeties, which they describe as unique candy mixes. And some of the proceeds from the sales of those candies will go to the Nicholas Children's Hospital in Miami. So, I don't know, like the Reggie Bar or the Baby Ruth, although some say that Baby Ruth wasn't named after Babe Ruth, some say it was. The Sweeties is for Jay Ajayi.
Does it come in pickle?
Good line. I feel like I can't top it. I will say, with Jay, he's done a great job of turning himself into a brand. Like, he started at Boise State, the J Train, got the whole stadium doing the J Train when he gets into the end zone, got the stadium to play the train noise when he does something, and now at the NFL level, he's getting his own emoji and his own candy. His agency has done a great job with him and himself being a part of it before he had an agency when he was at Boise State. So great job, Jay.
Quick Hits with Bob and Chris on 93.1 The Ticket.
I think he also has a fun personality, which I think helps everything he tries to do.
Yeah, he's engaging. He's fun to talk to. And when you're fun to talk to and you're charismatic, more opportunities are going to be there for you.
And it helps when you rush for 1,000 yards last year, too.
Thanks when you have 200-yard rushing games three times in a season and helping fantasy owners in the process.
When we come back, more illegal hits in football. Talk about rules trying to legislate against it. Pro or college better? That's next on Sports Radio The Ticket. College and pro football have different rules on targeting and late hits. And I know all of the penalties are designed to try to get that out of the game. But Chris, am I missing something, or does it seem like we have had more targeting calls this year in college than in the past couple of years when it had sort of gone in the other direction where it looked like it was doing what it's supposed to? And in the NFL, it seems like we've had a lot of helmet-to-helmet hits as well.
I don't know the numbers on targeting. That's something you could probably look up. Depends what games you're watching. You're going more of a feel thing than actually backing. Do the numbers back you up?
I'm backing up nothing. I'm just saying in the games that I have seen.
Yeah, and there is nothing that matches what I saw yesterday. Like, you could say there is more late hits or whatever. What I saw yesterday in the Bears-Packers game with Tony Romo on the call, and I'm looking forward to hearing your thoughts on Tony Romo a little bit later on Idaho Sports Talk, as Jeff Gaves mentioned during that break. But seeing Danny Trevathan, who's one of the linebackers for the Bears, and what he did to Davante Adams, former Fresno State wide receiver, was a different level of late slash unnecessary hits, to where it made you cringe when you saw it. And I was watching the game live at the time, and that was one of those, oh, you got to lean back and, like, you know, back of your chair and you almost fall over. It was one of those old hits that you used to celebrate in football, and I'm glad we've gotten to the point where it's like, okay, you don't see that kind of hit and go, oh my goodness, I can't wait to see this on Jacked Up on Monday with that ESPN segment that they used to have. So we've officially made the transition, but that was the whole act from the hit itself was just a terrible, dirty hit. Everything that they've taught you to not do, he did. Lee with the helmet, launching up into the head area of the defensive player who was defenseless, or the offensive player who was defenseless, and basically stood up going nowhere. That's everything they teach you not to do, and he did on that play. And then acted like the world was ending because a penalty was called on him afterward. He was trash-talking with Aaron Rodgers and the rest of the Packers and upset with the officials. Like, you got to take that. Like, that was dirty, and most people who saw it knew right away that was not what you were supposed to do. And for you to act like that after the hit was, to me, not as bad as the hit, but close to it.
I thought it was one of the worst I've seen, for the simple reason that the NFL and colleges outlaw chop blocks. And a chop block is where somebody is engaged above the waist, blocking, holding or doing whatever, where there's contact, and then somebody goes underneath and cuts their legs from under them. Basically, that's what the play came about. There was a bear that was making the tackle. Legally, he had the receiver, Adam, stood up, and he was going to make the tackle. If Trevathan came in and, you know, went around the waist and wanted to help out on the tackle, it wasn't probably late. I don't think a whistle blew at the time, so we'll give him that. But he stood up, as Chris said, launching with the helmet, at the helmet. I think it's one of the worst I've seen.
Yeah, to the point where, why wasn't he kicked out of this game? The NFL, I had to look this up because I thought that they didn't have a rule that could eject somebody for one hit at the time, and maybe that's why he was able to survive in the game. But this most recent offseason, they did implement a rule that did say that the official's discretion, that they can eject somebody for an illegal hit on a first offense. That was what Troy Vincent said during the offseason. The NFL wants to eliminate hits that he termed catastrophic by employing the maximum level of deterrence. So I can't remember, though, in the NFL seeing this year somebody ejected for one hit. But this had to be the situation. And I thought it was strange that the officials, they were even slow to throw the flag at first. Like, the official closest to this play didn't even throw the flag. It was one on the opposite side who threw it. To the point where the college system, and I'm very critical of the targeting in college through the first couple of years of it, but they are closer to being on the right side than the NFL is, because not only do they throw the flag, they say you're ejected, but then they go to the video to review it. And the NFL, they don't. That's not on the books where this is a reviewable play to see whether you should be ejected or not. In college football, that is the part that they have right. And I know you hate replay, and I know you hate the games being longer, but when it comes to somebody being thrown out of the game or not, you want to make sure you get that right. This should have been an example of 15-yard penalty, review, see how egregious it was, the dude's up on out the game.
100% agree on that, something that should be reviewable. Players should be thrown out of a game if they do something like this. But also, sometimes an official will think they see something and throw a flag, call targeting, and eject somebody. And sometimes it's maybe worth a penalty, but it's not worth an ejection. And sometimes it's not worth anything. If you're going to penalize somebody for lost time, 15 yards in the grand scheme of things, I don't care about 15 yards. But if you're going to make a player sit out for the rest of that half and whatever the next half is, if you're going to take that away from them, you need to be right. And if you are right, I have no problem doing that and kicking the guy out. But at least make sure that the person that's getting punished does deserve to be punished.
And he did. And I go
but
back,
in the NFL, there was nothing. Now, can they go back and review it and suspend him next week?
They can. And they will probably. I don't know for sure, but I don't know how they can look at that and say, all right, it's fine. We suspended Burfict for 5 games in a preseason hit. We're not going to suspend this guy.
This was worse than that.
Absolutely.
Burfict just got nailed, I think, for a longtime offender.
Correct. Now, I go back to this phrase. Troy Vincent said the league wants to eliminate hits that he terms catastrophic by employing the maximum level of deterrence. To me, the maximum level of deterrence for a hit like this, going back to look at it and issuing a suspension, I really do agree with he needs to be out as long as Adams is out. That is the maximum level of deterrence. That is accomplishing the goal of you don't want to injure somebody on an illegal hit, because you're going to be out as long as that guy is out, and you don't want to endanger your own spot with the team. So that is your maximum level of deterrence. I would go that route. I'm a fan of that punishment. I think that Trevathan should be suspended for as long as Davante Adams is out for the Green Bay Packers.
Are you willing to go as far, if Adams had to call it a career, that he's done, he's out of the league?
Give him a year. Like, if Davante Adams is career, like, let's say,
because that would be the ultimate. That would be the ultimate.
Kevin Gilbride, like, wasn't he the player who, out of Rutgers, who got paralyzed?
No, Kevin Gilbride was a coach. You're talking about
somebody.
Oh, I know the guy at Rutgers. He does the color now for the Rutgers
games. That's right. That's Kevin Gilbride as a coach. But sorry, I don't know his name. We can find it and make sure that we get it right. But he was injured in a game. I don't know if the hit was necessarily illegal or not, but let's say
I don't think it was. Eric LeGrand.
LeGrand, that's right. If Eric LeGrand's situation happened with Davante Adams here, like, I'm not saying that maybe Trevathan's NFL career should end, because that is extreme.
But that would be the ultimate.
But a year. Like, maximum being a year.
A year plus, or a year from the time? I mean, are you going to say the rest of the year plus?
Yeah.
Or just 16 games, whatever that works out to.
Mm-hmm. So if you've had an illegal hit that cost a guy their NFL career, you need to be out at least a year on that suspension. That's your maximum deterrence. You will not try to hit to injure somebody. Because, Fish, you were telling me earlier this morning about this player from Miami who had a very dangerous quote about trying to injure somebody.
This is the Miami Hurricanes.
Yeah, we're talking about the Miami Hurricanes. They played Duke this weekend. He said the defense's goal is to knock the quarterback for Duke out of the game. And his quote was, if we can get him out of the game, it's going to be a good game.
See, that if you really want maximum level of deterrence, You need to implement something. If you're the one that ended up illegally hitting this quarterback and causing him to miss 3 weeks, you need to miss 3 weeks.
That's a bad statement. That is a very bad statement. I mean, it's one thing to say we want to harass the quarterback and make it extremely difficult for him so that, you know, he can't even set up to throw the football. I'm okay with that. But I'm not okay with we want to get the guy out of the game.
Yeah, that sounds a lot like what you're familiar with when your Saints had over there, Fish, with bounties. And
no, we're not going to start reading the lips of Miami Hurricanes on the sideline. Yeah, he went on to say, we noticed on the film he doesn't slide, so we're going to punish him for that.
You're walking a very dangerous line, and that's what we're trying to stop football from being. Well, I guess I said we, but there's the other perspective, and it's kind of led by the president who, on the same press conference that he mentioned the things about the national anthem, he did say that the football is not dangerous enough, and that's not a good thing for the game, that football is not dangerous enough. So I don't know. I don't know where we're going. Maybe that's the direction that we're going to go. Football's going to become less stringent on these kind of penalties, and they're going to encourage these kind of hits.
No,
I don't know.
I can't see that. I can't see that. Can you? With CTE and with everything? No.
That's what the president just said.
Wow. Yeah, just because somebody is saying that. No, I don't think so.
He just happens to be the president of the country.
I know, but he's not in charge of the league. No, I don't see that happening. CTE, everything out there, they're going in the other direction.
That's what I thought, too.
Mm-hmm. Come to Dave & Buster's on Sunday at 2 o'clock for a KTIK watch party. Win prizes, there's fun food, great specials. I'll be the one out there representing KTIK at Dave & Buster's on Milwaukee near the mall. We'll watch San Francisco play a game. We can watch Tampa Bay and the Giants, Oakland and the Broncos. Those are just some of the late afternoon games that start at 2 o'clock. So join me at Dave & Buster's for a KTIK watch party. When we come back, up next for our show is the game of the week. We pick a game of the week in college football every week. This week we have chosen USC ranked number 5 against Washington State ranked 16th. They will be playing tonight. You can hear the game right here on Sports Radio The Ticket. Yogi Roth from the Pac-12 Network joins us to break the game down. Which quarterback does he like better, Luke Falk or Sam Darnold? That's next on Sports Radio The Ticket. Every week during the college football season, Chris and I select a game of the week to profile. This week we've chosen tonight's matchup in the Pac-12 between 5th-ranked USC and 16th-ranked Washington State. Both teams come in with records of 4-0. Yogi Roth, who covers it for the Pac-12 Network, joins us now via telephone. Yogi, is this game going to be as good a game as we think it is?
Yeah, I think it is. I think it's going to be an absolute blast, to be quite honest with you. You know, you look at this ball game, to me, I look at the fronts that are the most exciting. You know, I really think that when I look at his ball game, the movement of Washington State that you guys saw on the defensive front is real, you know, and they try to get the chalk last and try to really kind of dictate terms on defense, which doesn't happen very often in college football. Skying guys late into the box, and USC, you know, earlier today, this morning, Toa Lobodon, their starting left tackle, doesn't make the trip with potential staph infection, I think, was the report. So how does this offensive line deal with Hercules Mataafa, Frankie Louvu, all the movement and the targeting that's necessary? Because for SC to win, I believe that they need to just run the football. And they should run the football. They're better than them in that regard. They're bigger. They're more physical. They've got elite backs. But now with a new O-line against a super athletic defensive front, I don't think it's going to be as easy. Not that it would have been easy, but I don't think it's going to be as efficient as it would have been, obviously, with your starter left tackle.
Now, with Washington State, that's an opponent that Boise State has seen, and it was a really interesting game in the fact that Boise State just completely outplayed the Cougars for three quarters, and then Luke Falk got hurt, and somehow with Bronco mistakes and a switch flipped, Washington State rallied to win that in overtime. And for me, it's hard to get the first three quarters out of my head when they look so bad the first three quarters. So what has changed with Washington State to allow them to reach a ceiling that really wasn't reached against Boise State?
It's a great question, and I think it's a fun topic to talk about because the first 3 weeks, we just overreact, right, in college football, I think, which is fun. It's kind of our job. And, you know, we look at coaches and we put them on the hot seat. We look at games and all of a sudden they totally turn. We look at teams and say, oh, they're super inconsistent. And I just think the reality is that it's a reminder that they're 18 to 22. It's a reminder that there's no preseason football. And it's a reminder that every year, I believe this, and Chris Peterson said it, and he's probably said it to you guys before, every year's a rebuild. You know, it's not a reload. Like, you have to relearn how to practice. You have to learn and rebuild how to practice together, how to compete in tough games. And I think this team for Wazoo, we've seen them not play well week one for, you know, multiple years in a row. This year, obviously, that didn't happen. But you saw the Boise game, as you referenced. Things were, you know, they were just getting beat at every facet of the game. And all of a sudden, you know, it's a turnover, it's a spark. It's a special teams play, it's a spark. And all of a sudden, we got a ball game. And I just think that that's why we love college football so much. You know, you see comebacks like that more in the NFL, right, because of just the play clock and, you know, three downs and you force people to punt. You haven't seen a lot in college. And for me, it was just a reality of that team kind of continually evolving and, you know, blown away with what Tyler Helinski did that night. I don't think any of us thought that would happen, even in the first drive that he has, right? I think he has like a kind of wild pass where he tries to scramble and, you know, almost gets catastrophic. And overall, I'm sure for Boise, it was just heartbreaking.
Yogi Roth joining us here on Idaho Sports Talk with Bob and Chris on Sports Radio The Ticket. He's with the Pac-12 Network. We're talking about our game of the week, USC at Washington State, that game taking place tonight. You could also hear it right here on Sports Radio The Ticket. All right, Yogi, I'm kind of disappointed so far in the eye test in USC. They struggled to beat Texas. I didn't think they looked overly good against Cal. Is this a team that maybe isn't as good as people thought they would be at the beginning of the year?
Yeah, I think that's fair. You know, I mean, everybody thought they'd be, you know, arguably a lot of people's college football, you know, championship game or definitely the top four. I think they're one of the top two teams in the Pac-12 right now, and I think it's those two. And then we kind of just don't know. You know, we don't know if what Wazoo is, as we just talked about. We don't know, you know, the realities around a couple other teams in this conference. Utah won with the quarterback spot, but, you know, you look at teams, you know, 3 and 4, they would be those two for me right now. And I think that's real. But I think that they're still really elite. You know, I was talking to a coach last night, and he's like, I'd take their roster tomorrow. You know, and I think a lot of teams around the country would. And I just think it's going to be times where they have to gel. I mean, you look at not just the players they lost, but the production they lost. You know, it was real. It was third down production, right? And so still trying to find those types of weapons. You know, Deontay Burnett tonight, how healthy is he going to be? You know, Stephen Mitchell not playing. Like, are these young receivers ready right now in Tyler Vaughn's? Those are all things that I just kind of continually evolve in my eyes. But they're a legit team. They're built from the inside out, and their biggest challenge will be staying healthy. You know, Porter Gustin, him not playing against Cal, I think you saw this defensive front and how big of a loss that was for them being stout against the run. You know, and I think you can kind of go up and down that roster and say, okay, a loss of a guy here, you saw the impact. And I just think that when I watch film of all these games, and even Alabama, when I watched them a couple weeks ago, nobody's playing great football. You know, Clemson's probably playing the best out of anybody in the country right now in my eyes, but even Oklahoma, you know, we saw them smoke Ohio State, and what a beautiful game, and then you watch them the next week, and you kind of wonder who it is, and I just think that's kind of the reality of where teams are early on in the season. I don't think teams have really hit a stride. UW probably playing the best, but they just lost their second-best receiver and arguably their best corner, you know. So I just think that throughout the year, nobody's going to be that type of dominant team right now. At least in my eyes, I haven't seen that outside of, you know, potentially Clemson.
Yogi Roth joining us, analyst for the Pac-12 Network. The game of the week this week, USC, Washington State, that game being tonight. Which team has the advantage at quarterback?
It's a great question. I think it's more about the system, you know, to be honest with you. You know, I think both of them are NFL players. I think they both have a huge ceiling. You know, this is, I think, game 15 for Sam and probably 35 for Luke. You know, so the experience is totally different. You know, Sam Darnold obviously hasn't been on the Palouse in his entire career, and it's a different place to play. It's kind of like a basketball game with the fans on you, and you guys know him just being there. It's different. Luke's job is to be boring at quarterback. You know, it's literally in that system just getting it out, getting out, getting it out, and it'll be fun to see how Clancy Pendergast, the defensive coordinator, kind of adapts to that style of play, which, you know, Luke's clearly gotten some mastery over. But Sam, where he's special, and I guess I'd give him the edge, his second and third reaction game is just different than anybody's in the country. You know, we talk about the athleticism of Lamar Jackson all day long, and it's freakish. But what Sam can do with his athleticism in the pocket and making unique throws down the field is just something I haven't seen. I'm trying to just rack my brain for quarterbacks who've done that. I can't think of one, you know, and this is my, I think, 18th year in major college football. And I can't think of a guy that can make those types of plays, you know, that did it at his age. You know, I think he completes more unique throws than guys even attempt, to be quite honest. And people make a lot of us picks. I broke them all down this week, and I don't think they're that big of a deal. I actually thought the worst one was the first one of the entire season. So I don't know. The advantage to me, I guess, would go with Sam. I think he's that type of player that can lift his team. You know, he's kind of got that, you know, that LeBron quality to him of, like, you know, kind of what Rosen's been doing or attempting to do, where he's just playing out of his mind, is doing everything he can. And I think Sam is that guy that can make a couple plays that don't just break your heart in every facet of the quarterback position. So I'd go there, but I think you're looking at two guys that will end up being next-level quarterbacks indeed.
Finally, Yogi, do you have a pick for us tonight? Who gets it done?
I think SC gets it done. You know, I really do. I think it's going to be a classic game. You know, we talked about the defensive front for Washington State. I think their offensive line is going to be a story I'd want to follow. You know, Luke goes to the line of scrimmage, as you guys know, with two plays every time, a run and a pass. I think they're splits that are a little, you know, a little unique in terms of being a little bit bigger than other people's. The loss of Porter Gustin, see how healthy Rasheem Green is on the inside for USC. Marlon Tuipulotu, I don't think he made the trip, a guy who started for them earlier in the year at nose tackle. So I'm excited to see how SC handles the tempo of Wazoo in terms of big play, next play, you know, how they piggyback chunk plays, and then, of course, how their corners play against, you know, probably their best test they've seen at receiver, and vice versa, the best secondary that Wazoo's seen all season long from an athletic standpoint. So I think SC wins. I think it's going to be a really close game, though. I think it's going to be a fun one to watch. I think it's going to go back and forth. I think it's got Pac-12 After Dark written all over it. But overall, I think SC will just be able to run the football. And I think they're going to have to do that, dictate terms a little bit, dictate the play clock, try to take away two possessions. If you can, two possessions a half away from Luke Falk and what they're accustomed to, then I think the Trojans will be in position. But I think it's, you know, one, two-score game at the very most.
Yogi, thanks for your time. We really appreciate it.
Anytime, guys. Thank you.
Again, you can hear that game right here on Sports Radio The Ticket. Up next, you'll hear Chris and I. We're going to disagree with each other. One of us will side with Yogi, and one of us will go with the Cougars. It's the easiest $1,000 ever. Listen, weekdays at 7 a.m., 10 a.m., 1 p.m., and 4 p.m. Hear the keyword and text it to 62582, and you could instantly win $1,000. KTIK's 4K a day on Sports Radio The Ticket.
This Ticket Sports Update is sponsored by Western States Cat. The Western States Cat winning moment versus Virginia was a 5-yard touchdown run on the heels of an 80-yard first possession Boise State drive. Western States Cat and the Cat Rental Store are built for you. We heard Yogi Ross pick. He's taking USC. It's one of the games we're picking on KTIK. You can check all those picks out. But who do you guys got? You guys got the Trojans or the Cougars tonight?
I got the Cougars.
I'm going against Yogi.
I'm going against Yogi. I think USC is going to have trouble with Luke Falk. I think the crowd, I think the quickness, as he mentioned up front on defense, I think it's going to be a very entertaining game. I think we're going to see the teams get up into the high 20s, maybe even to the mid-30s. But I think Washington State's going to have enough to go to 5-0 with their fifth straight home game. I haven't been as impressed with USC as others. I don't think they're a top-five team, at least what I've seen, unless the USC Trojans that seem a little bit depleted with injury decide they want to play football.
Now, with Washington State, and this came up, Mike Prater said it quite a bit when Boise State was about to face Washington State. They're really good at beating bad teams in the league and putting up crazy numbers against them, racking up the statistics and letting Luke Falk have all the passing records. But when they face good teams, they don't do that. It doesn't work. They don't have the big numbers. They don't win those games. I think USC is a good team. I think USC, maybe they've underachieved in your mind. I'm looking at a schedule that hasn't really had a break yet. You know, Western Michigan might not be as good as they were last year, but that's still, for a first game for your weakest opponent on the schedule so far, that's not a terrible team compared to a lot of the other squads that these teams face early in the year. Texas is a rivalry game for USC, even though they don't play much, but half the team probably that's on Texas right now got hooked on Texas football because of what they did to USC in the championship game back in the day. So I think that was a big game for USC. Didn't matter how much you win it by, the fact that you won it's enough for me. And I just don't like Washington State's offense once they face a team that athletically can meet them. It's based on short passes and making people miss. If USC is disciplined like Boise State was through most of that game, I don't think Washington State's going to move the ball with plenty of efficiency.
Well, Chris, unfortunately, Bob seems to know what he's talking about. He's got a 3-game lead on both of us in the pick. So you and I are tied for last.
yeah.
It's you might early. Be able to pick up on me if I make a mistake here.
It's early.
I'm still taking USC. I'm surprised Bob's talking to me because another one of our picks is Georgia-Tennessee, and I'm the only person hanging on the Volunteers. I'm surprised Bob is still acknowledging my existence today.
I've seen so many games, both in person and on television, between Georgia and Tennessee. And to me, that's one of the games out there every year that I'd say you never know.
Just don't disturb
I'm afraid. That's one that I think Georgia should win. It's a road game at Tennessee. But Tennessee has had some crazy games. Last year they shouldn't have won, and they won on a Hail Mary at the end of the game. So we'll see. This is one Georgia should get.
Fish, do you think we should go over Bob's house during the game? Knock on the door a bunch of times. If he doesn't answer, knock on the window. If he doesn't answer, go to the backyard, try to slide that back door open and sneak into the house and then try to change the channel. Grab the remote.
See, up until grab the remote, I feel like we're fine. As soon as you go for that remote, you may come to work Monday with one less hand.
Bach,
you can come over as long as you wear red. Don't wear orange.
I got a lot of orange. Yeah, Syracuse, Boise State up in here. Wear that over the house. Represent Tennessee. No, I picked Georgia.
We'll have to bring Brian Murphy back if you wear orange into Bob's house.
That's true.
Well, yesterday was quiet on the NCAA scandal front. No one was fired, thankfully, but people are starting to come forward with their past allegations. Jay Williams, who now works for ESPN, said yesterday that during his time as a sports agent, quote, "I know that we gave an AAU coach for a guy named Kevin Love, who now plays for the Cleveland Cavaliers, over $250,000 just to get a meeting with him," which was then supposed to be led to them being a clientele. Unfortunately, Love denied that because Love did not trust Jay Williams. I wonder why.
There's no love. If there's no trust, there's no love. I mean, that's
also when you're paying for
relationship
clients,
advice.
When you're paying for clients, usually, you know. But besides Jay Williams, my favorite person also, of course, he had a comment on this. That would be LeVar Ball. He was on a podcast with Bill Ryder. You can usually hear right after Caves and Prater, except today because there's Washington State USC on the ticket. And this is what LeVar Ball said about people approaching him offering him money.
Money they offer you, they're gonna take care of the AAU team. They're gonna give everybody uniforms, everybody shoes. I mean, it's just any kind of way. But see, the word got out like LeVar don't need that. Somebody even had a false accusation and said, "Oh, LeVar asked me for $200,000." I was like, "Wow, that's funny. I'm going to do with $200,000. After I bought a car and paid some bills, I'm stuck right where I'm at."
Hard for the shoe companies to pay you when you make your own shoes.
I agree. I don't think LeVar Ball took any money because LeVar Ball doesn't want to be beholden to anybody. LeVar Ball wants to be the man. So I do not think the Ball kids took any money from anybody.
So he finally did something right.
Oh, absolutely.
Now my question is, does the NCAA learning about what goes on, maybe some people didn't have an idea that the shoe companies were this heavily involved with some of the top prospects. Now that that came to the surface, does that make you look at LeVar Ball differently? For anybody out there, do you look at LeVar Ball differently? You used to look down on him, but now realizing how dirty the industry really is, maybe LeVar Ball is at least doing everything above board, and that there's some honor in doing that. He might be boisterous, he might be obnoxious and in your face, but at least he's doing stuff above the table, and generally it sounds like he has the best interest of his kids in front of it, for him. So, hey, maybe LeVar Ball's the big winner out of this big
he knew it all
FBI
along.
Investigation.
He looked like an idiot. Now he looks like a genius.
Now, Fish, when you guys had him on, when does he promise his shoes? Is it coming up
fall? Thanksgiving. November 24th was the original date, but then they said it was so popular it's backlogged.
Okay.
That's for Lonzo. I haven't looked into LaMelo's.
Well, whatever. Let's see that he gets a run of product out. I mean, people could think a lot worse of him if he took your money. That would be fraud, right? If he weren't, you know, so
FBI.
Let's see if he comes through with the shoes and how they come out and how they look.
What happens first? Fish gets his shoes, and the rest of the people get their shoes from LeVar Ball, or Andrew Luck plays a game of football?
I would probably going to go with the shoes at this point. Mm-hmm. I thought you were going to say if Lonzo's dunked on by then, by someone, anyone.
Well, he doesn't face Ben Simmons until a little bit later on in the season.
Oh, okay. Well, speaking of long-term plans, perhaps Russell Westbrook had a long-term plan all along. Today he signed his extension with the Oklahoma City Thunder, 5 years, $205 million. In the talk all offseason, old Paul George came. He's a free agent. Russell Westbrook's been taken forever. Now, today's Kevin Durant's birthday. Put two and two together. The captain of pettiness is back, and he's with the Thunder for the next 5 years.
Let's bring on this NBA season. There's just way too much drama out there on the court. It's going to be so great. Between the players moving, the beefs that have been stewing, and Russell Westbrook now is signed up for 5 more years of living in Oklahoma City with that kind of money, that could go a long way there. Yeah, when is October 15th? It's like, you know, a few days away.
Not soon enough.
It's a Sunday after Boise State's at San Diego State.
Gotcha. Maybe it's like the 16th. I don't think the season starts on a Sunday. But that week just needs to be here soon. Please, let's start the basketball.
Which, Chris, we were talking. NBA 2K18 came out about a week ago. There's apparently a glitch, per se, where if you're playing against Oklahoma City as the Warriors and the Thunder win, Kevin Durant will not follow his Warriors teammates off the court. He will celebrate with the virtual Thunder team in a win.
I don't understand that. But is that Kevin Durant or one of his social media fake profiles that's celebrating with? See, you got social media fake profiles that's been a part of the greatest offseason of all time. But it's so funny because Kevin Durant doesn't seem like he's holding Russell Westbrook to like some kind of, doesn't have a dartboard in his room of Russell Westbrook's face, and he throws darts at it every day. It seems like Durant kind of wants the beef to go away. Russell Westbrook's having no back down. He has the dartboard of Kevin Durant in his room, throwing darts on it every day. Like, you know, this beef will not be squashed because Russell Westbrook does not want this beef to be squashed.
That's what he did all offseason. He planned it. Like, all right, when's Kevin Durant's birthday? All right. When's his next milestone? When's his one-year anniversary coming up? Maybe I'll go for 70 that night and take it all. He's planning it all out. And then we'll end the sports update with good news for a former Boise State Bronco. Jay Ajayi, first NFL player to ever have a custom emoji on Twitter. If you tweet out hashtag JTrain, you'll get a custom Jay Ajayi emoji. You better use it while it lasts because I don't think he's going to get many more when you have a 16-yard performance against the Jets. And I can only hope for a worse performance against my Swiss cheese Saints defense.
Yeah, the problem was the Jets' defense wasn't supposed to be great, and Jay Ajayi only did that. So maybe Jay has lost a step.
And no touchdowns. No touchdowns this year.
I'm trying to help you out there, but we're going to come back with some picks. Jay Ajayi is going to be a part of it, and I don't think you're going to like my answer.
Caller number 3 right now is going to win a pair of tickets to watch Boise State and BYU on the big screen next Friday night, a week from tonight at the Village Cinema. We have both a family-friendly theater as well as a 21-plus that will include combo specials for drinks and food. It's Boise State football against BYU. Call 208-424-9300 right now. It's brought to you by Peterson Auto Group and Peterson's Clothing. Up next, we've got Quick Picks. One of the picks we're making. Will Jay Ajayi score 2 or more touchdowns against Fish's Saints? That's next on Sports Radio The Ticket.
It's time to consult the Magic 8-Ball. Open up a fortune cookie or maybe even flip a coin.
I get him into the future.
However they do it, it's time for some quick picks and predictions with Bob and Chris.
It is sponsored by Pro-Am Sports, your full-service pro shop and bowling specialist with high-quality bowling balls, bags, shoes, and accessories. Located right inside Westie's Garden Lanes in Garden City. Time for quick picks because we don't learn anything on Fridays because we're going to the weekend. At least that's what we like to think. So we'll start off with the Mountain West. Boise State not in action tonight, but perhaps one of the teams challenging them in the Mountain Division, Colorado State, taking on the second-best team in the West, Hawaii. So, Chris, who you got, Colorado State or Hawaii in Hawaii?
That's the problem, that's in Hawaii. How do I know what Colorado State's doing? Is it a business trip? Mike Bobo's bunch? Or are they just having a party? I think it's going to be a business trip. I think they're playing at one of the higher levels of any Mountain West team. It's not really saying that much. San Diego State being the best team in the non-conference so far. Boise State looking decent at times, not great others. CSU's had some decent performances. Their offense, when it's rolling, is pretty good. And, you know, I wasn't really impressed with Hawaii in their game against Wyoming. I know it was a road game for them, but Hawaii didn't look great by any stretch. So I'm going with Colorado State, knowing that it could go against me here. But I think that's a safe pick.
Bob?
I like Colorado State as well. I think that they are better. They've played a tough schedule. I mean, they lost to Alabama. Colorado was a game which they lost, but maybe they didn't look that good against, look great against Oregon State. I think that Hawaii has improved. I agree with Chris, they're the second-best team in the West, but I think there's 4 or 5 teams in the Mountain that are better than Hawaii still, and I will also go with Colorado State to win. I mean, if you want to win the Mountain Division, this is one you need because you catch a break. Air Force lost to San Diego State. Boise State, one of the other competitors, also has to play San Diego State. Colorado State does not play the Aztecs. So this is the road game against the other division. This is where maybe if you stumble, you put yourself in a bad spot you can take advantage of if you can beat the Warriors.
One more Mountain West game to pick from. We heard from Nate Kreckman of Inside the Mountain West say if you want to watch a quick game, watch this one. Air Force New Mexico, two option teams, might be done in an hour and a half. They still sometimes throw the ball, though, Bob. So will there be 15 or more combined completions between Air Force and New Mexico?
I'm going to go with the over on that, 15 and more. I think that both of these teams will throw the ball some. One of these teams is going to be behind, so they might have to throw the ball. There will be more than 15 completions between these two teams come up tomorrow night.
Chris?
Nah, these are option teams. They want to keep it on the ground. We know the style of each. I saw New Mexico up close and personal with the rest of the Boise State fans, and it doesn't seem like passing the ball is their strength. I know they like to spread it out in their option, and Air Force is a little bit more compact with theirs. But even when they faced each other, was it last year when they faced each other? I don't remember a lot of passes in that
game. There's exactly 15 completions.
Yeah, there wasn't that many completions.
Air Force did throw 24 times in that game, though.
That in itself is an abnormally high number. I want to definitely say no.
Now we got the fish portion of the quick picks. We're starting with the Saints and Dolphins. It's your Monday or your Sunday morning breakfast football in London. Talked about it, Jay Ajayi, no touchdowns so far, but the Saints defense isn't much. So, Chris, will Jay Ajayi get two or more touchdowns against the Saints at 8 in the morning Mountain Time?
Yes, it's his home game. How often does Jay Ajayi get to play a game in London? Unless he played for the Jaguars, and it would
every
be
year.
Every single year he'd have one of these games. Yeah, he's going to get a couple of touchdowns. Saints defense ain't nothing. They're coming off of a bad week, the Dolphins, so you know their offense is going to be at least executing at a higher level. And Jay's just really good. He's going to get into the end zone and plow in there a couple of times against the Saints. Dolphins win the game. Jay is the hero. Perfect story. Back in England, and Jay Ajayi is the game's player of the game.
Bob?
I'm going to say no.
There we go.
I think Jay's going to get in there for one. I don't think he's going to get in there for two. I think the Saints are going to win the game.
There we go.
In London.
Two for Bob. Bob wins of the week. I don't care about the rest of them.
I like Jay. I think Jay's going to have a much better game than he did last year. But, he's been banged up a little bit. They say he's going to play. But that also scares me when you have somebody that you never know. Maybe they don't. Something happens and they don't get into the game. You're better off saying under. I'm going to stick with that. Hope Jay scores, but not more than once.
And finally, real quick, I'm sorry, Chris. Giancarlo Stanton, he crushed your dreams. You can look into it all he won. He has passed Ryan Howard, 59 home runs. He hit two last night. He's got three games left, all at home against the Braves. Bob, will he get to 61?
Yes, he'll get two in the next three games. I can't believe he went 1-for-13 at Coors Field. Did not get a home run at Coors Field, but he made up for lost time last night with a couple. He's going to play for sure in all three games. They're not going to take him out of the game. They're going to try to get him to 61, the Maris number. 60 gets him to Ruth. I think he's going to get there and get to 61 with two in the last three games.
Chris, don't be a hater now.
I'm going to be a hater.
Oh.
No. In fact, I think a couple of his home runs are going to be taken away, and he's going to finish behind Ryan Howard with only 57 home runs this season.
Of course. You're going
not
to 58. Some technicality.
It'll be discovered that the ball never really did go over the fence, and it won't count anyway. But hitting two home runs in a series, that's no guarantee even for Giancarlo Stanton. I don't think he gets to 61. I think the Braves will walk him and hit them before it gets to that because they're the Braves, and the Braves are the biggest haters. Not me. Atlanta. Atlanta Braves.
Atlanta has nothing.
You know with this division how it is with Atlanta? We both root for teams in that division. Atlanta is a bunch of haters.
Oh, no. They're throwing like guys who have like less than 100 combined inning pitch. They don't even know where to locate the ball. He's going to jack it up. Plus, Bob, if he goes over 61, I'm going to give it to you anyway, Bob, just so you know. 61 or more is what I should have said. Mm-hmm. But Chris, you're being a hater.
That's kind of how I took it, that
I'm hoping for more than 61. I want the unofficial record. But really, Chris, two touchdowns against my Saints and no 61 home runs for my man Giancarlo Stanton.
You're going to come in Monday. You're just going to be the saddest person in the world. You're going to have Coach Harsin press conference is going to be here, but we won't be able to hear it on the radio because you're crying too loud.
Yep, that's it.
Jeff Cave's in studio. I'll be sticking around to do the next 3 hours with Jeff on Idaho Sports Talk. So what do we have planned? I know we're going to talk some baseball.
Bob, you weren't even smiling. You bitched at the top of the show. You had to work 5 hours. What kind of work? People are just not happy at their job.
I thought it was a bye week. I was supposed to get a bye.
Well, today's Friday.
Hashtag yeah. No days off. He's Bill Belichick. No days yeah. off.
Well, if you haven't heard Bob sing,
oh my
you
gosh.
Are in for something else. So stay tuned for Idaho Sports Time.
Uh-oh. We have the voice going on here?
I'll tell you what. They are really taking a chance if they're having me sing.
The voice has met Idaho Sports Talk. It's about to go down in about 5 minutes from now. Oh, my goodness. You can't miss this.
Keep it tuned. Coming up next on Sports Radio, The Ticket.
Sports Radio 93.1 FM and 1350 AM, The Ticket.